Four Chambers has always struck me as a really beautiful name, and of course it's a reference to the Four Chambers of the Heart, but where did it come from?
It was the best worst name I had, and so I was like, well, I can go with this. Like, Four Chambers is fine. And I think since then it's really become kind of an object of meditation for us at the press in terms of thinking about what the heart means and how this love really informs how we are moving through the city and the community and really being human beings.
A lot of your writers, a lot of your activities are taking place right in the heart of the city. Is that a coincidence?
Downtown Phoenix specifically, I think, has always had a vibrant literary community. I mean, before we were even around at all. And it's always been there. And so I don't think that, you know, anything like rose up or ignited when we came around. I think we just were all of a sudden this platform that was outside of the university, you know, that was accessible in other ways, which hadn't really been super present yet. And I think that that kind of was how the community came together so quickly and so tightly.
The reason that we were doing things downtown and continue to do things downtown was because that's where we were, and that's where we were going to try and find other people.
How do you envision Four Chambers in, say, 5 years from now?
So we're looking at, you know, publishing between 8 and 12 works a year for the next 2 years. We're looking at creating a membership model. I think a lot of presses are going the nonprofit route because it is simply hard to cover overhead and grow with the profit model of books. They're just not very profitable. And we're not really doing this for profit either. We're doing this to create community and to create discourse.
Jake and Kelsey, welcome to Heart of the Arts on KBOC. How are you?
Good, thanks.
Good.
Excellent. So to start off, like a lot of artists in town, neither of you is from Phoenix originally. How did you end up here?
Well, I moved here about 3 years ago. I was living in California. That's where I grew up. Finished my associate's degree. My best friend was living here, and she was like, hey, I have an apartment. And I was like, okay, and that was kind of it. So, and it just ended up being a really good fit, so.
Yeah, I also had really no reason for moving here. I had a friend who was doing a master's in music therapy at ASU. She had a few choices for her program, including New Orleans, Denton, Texas. We liked Phoenix because there was a band here named Andrew Jackson Jihad, which is now known as AJJ. For political reasons. But we liked them a lot, and we saw that they had a good time here, and so all three of us kind of figured, why not? Moved out here, I started waiting tables, started trying to do Four Chambers. They moved back, and since I sort of was beginning to have some networks and some connections here and a reason to stay, I stayed while they went back.
Now, what's striking about Four Chambers is there are a lot of small press publishers, there are a lot of people who put out journals, and there are a lot of great collaborations among creative people, but you guys are an actual couple. how did this come together?
So Jake started Four Chambers himself.
In 2013.
Yeah, and then a year after that was when I learned about it, and I actually submitted to the first issue.
I think, like the story that much.
No,
as far
he
as,
didn't. I went back and
records
looked.
Go. My notes
it
on
says
file
like, no,
were,
I don't want this.
Yeah, but yeah. Other people did, and I'm not the only person on the board. So.
yeah, so thank goodness, because what would have happened?
But you had never met before, right?
No. So mm-hmm. I was volunteering at Lawn Gnome Publishing, the bookstore, and saw a little flyer for Four Chambers, and I had decided that I wanted to try to actually write. Which is funny because thinking about my writing then and my writing now is like really weird. It's very, very different. But yeah, I submitted a couple things. One got published and that's how we met. And then I just kind of kept coming around because I wanted to be a part of something. And Jake brought me on as a reader and then an associate or assistant director. that all happened within a year. And then we started dating.
Yeah, but we were spending a lot of time together, and it just sort of happened, I think.
Now, who was us at that point?
I've always been, unfortunately, at the center of Four Chambers. I founded it. I've had an enormous amount of help from a lot of really key people along the way. At that point, it was myself, Jeff Smith, perhaps an individual named John DeLeiden. I think Brandy Reinke had left by that time. So we've had a few people sort of come through, but it's always been on the business side of things, as opposed to, say, reading submissions or editing or even laying out the products. It's always been a very, very small group of people. At times, the largest we've had is three. So it was pretty much myself and Jeff at that time, and we decided we needed more help.
Now, Four Chambers has always struck me as a really beautiful name, and of course it's a reference to the Four Chambers of the Heart, but where did it come from?
So the story goes like this. When I first moved to Phoenix, I was looking for a way to be part of a literary community or a literary scene. I had done some literary things in college, like editing the undergraduate journal, which was called Contrast. I took a poetry class. I was trying to write myself. And then I completely left everything behind and moved to Phoenix, and everything was really spread out and hot, and I didn't know where to go. So I started going to these writing groups. They had a zine they were working on called the Palo Verde Pages. We were thinking about imagery and the idea of this Palo Verde tree kind of spreading over Phoenix, providing shade and a microclimate for other things to grow in that kind of like nurturing mother tree kind of way. The Palo Verde was also obliquely regional without being overtly, so we could still have a strong local sort of connotation but still read on a national level. When that fell apart, I liked that image a lot of the skyline of Phoenix and something being over it, and the only other thing I could think of that would be over Phoenix would be the sun, because it was over us and I was hot all the time, and so
it's up there from time to time.
Yeah, I've noticed it occasionally over my shoulder. I'll say, why am I on fire? And I'll turn to the sun. So I started looking into, and I spent like probably 3 months on the name, to be honest. This was before work got really crazy with the press, so this is a very long answer too, I apologize. But I started looking into the sun as kind of this idea and this radiation and something that kind of touched everyone and provided energy. And I got into like the Latin root core. And the ideas that came from that were very poor. Like I had like Corona Press, which sounded too much like a beer. I also started then moving from core into the heart because of coronary. And so I was trying to tie those two together. And so I wanted to do like maybe like vital heat, which was like an Aristotelian thing. And then one of my coworkers showed me a picture of poison from the 80s and was like, vital heat. And I was like, okay, we'll scrap vital heat. I don't want to be an 80s glam rock press. I'm sorry.
This sounds like a very slow free association.
Yeah, it was definitely a creative process.
Most things are when it comes to Four Chambers.
Yeah, I mean, and the name is, I think, really important in terms of, you know, informing the mission and really articulating that vision in a really intuitive way. I mean, we really spend a lot of time on thinking about how things are going to be read and communicated. And so after all of the core roots and stuff, I the last name I sort of had upon was Four Chambers because it was understated, and it was the best worst name I had. And so I was like, well, I can go with this. Like, Four Chambers is fine. And I think since then it's really become kind of an object of meditation for us at the press in terms of thinking about what the heart means and how this love really informs not only the kinds of events and programs that we do and the kinds of publications that we produce, but how we behave as individuals, both within the organization and how we treat each other, but also as a whole and how we are moving through the city and the community and really being human beings, I think.
One thing I find really striking about both Four Chambers and also your location, where you're based, is that in a traditional city sort of like Phoenix, where it's really big and very functional, the university district is usually where all of the culture happens. Mm-hmm. But you guys are very much a downtown, you know, midtown kind of collective. And as the Roosevelt Row community has built up, a a lot of your writers, a lot of your activities are taking place right in the heart of the city. Is that a coincidence or, you know, a happy turn of events? Or do you think you sort of sensed that happening?
I can probably lead on that by saying two things. One is that when I moved to Phoenix, I didn't have a car. And so in order for things to be accessible to me, and I think to other people, just by force of necessity, we were looking for Central or downtown Phoenix. The other thing from the outset was that Four Chambers is about literature and about arts and culture, but within the context of a larger community and a larger kind of urban or human experience. And so at least in my thinking, there were very concerted efforts from the beginning to try and provide programming within a downtown core that was sort of struggling with programming, so to speak, and speaking to some kind of the just the sprawl of the city, trying to provide a little bit more of a center and a reason to be here.
I always refer to, I mean, the fact that downtown Phoenix specifically, I think, has always had a vibrant literary community. I mean, before we were even around at all. And it's always been there. And so I don't think that, you know, anything like rose up or ignited when we came around. I think we just were all of a sudden this platform that was outside of the university, you know, that was accessible in other ways, which hadn't really been super present yet. And I think that that kind of was how the community came together so quickly and so tightly, which is really cool and a really nice thing to be a part of.
Yeah, and I would add too, I mean, the reason that we were doing things downtown and continue to do things downtown was because that's where we were and that's where we were going to try and find other people. You know, Phoenix obviously really struggles with having a downtown core. And I mean, we also got started in 2013. I moved here in 2011 and, you know, we have sort of grown up with and in the city. And I really can't emphasize enough sort of Kelsey's point about us being a part of things and not really having done that much. You know, we are a community organization, first and foremost. We are a publishing company second. And really, like, we just do the administrative work that's required to kind of facilitate these events and programs that people are participating in. And so I think it's, you know, people are living in the city. We are, you know, at this point, now that we do have a car as well, looking at kind of expanding our reach a little bit. So, you know, we will be doing an event in downtown Chandler in the fall. We're starting to move a little bit north as well. So trying to move, say, between McDowell and Camelback. And we've always been sort of spread out and kind of have done things, you know, around the core and the center. But especially as downtown is becoming even more dense and more populated and to a certain extent, perhaps like inaccessible to organizations like us that don't necessarily have the resources to be booking certain kinds of venues or covering certain kinds of expenses, we sort of are moving a little bit farther out. I think as you see the core of the city really solidify and pack in, now we're sort of on that slightly outer tier.
You have been running these community writing workshops, both at Carly's and at one of the cafes.
Songbird.
At Songbird. And, you know, that's how, one of the ways that I got to know you. But one of the things that's really been striking outside of that is the Salon series.
Hmm.
That's fairly unusual. A writing workshop is usually very popular and they take place all over the place. But a salon is such a sort of European concept. How did you come up with it, and how do you actually draw people to these things?
So Jake can probably talk a little bit more about how he came up with it, but to be honest, I don't think anybody really came up with it. Like, it's been around for lots and lots of years. But it, Rosemary Dombrowski, who is our now permanent host of the salons, Get Lit is what they're called, and which Jake did come up with and is very proud of himself for. Yeah, Rosemary, she's one of our editors, and she, I think, will tell you that it's always kind of been like a dream of hers to lead a salon and to have just people come together and talk about literature, and it's in the way that we do it, it's structured, but it's also really free and also really open and accessible to anybody. We've realized that with the certain topics, it draws certain people, and that's kind of fun because you can just people get really hyped up about certain topics. So as far as drawing people to it, we honestly don't even have to do that much. It's just basically making a Facebook event. It's at Valley Bar, where a lot of people are comfortable. A lot of people know Valley Bar and enjoy it there. And so they've been really gracious and wonderful to us to just let us be doing things in their venue. And as far as that, it's just the topics that Rosemary and Jake come up with are really, they're just always really interesting, and they seem to tap into a deep sort of thought that people think about all the time but don't necessarily talk about with each other. And then once you read like a little paragraph of, you know, our last one was post-apocalyptic literature and the OCD, that's what you're calling it, the neurosis of literature. And people like read a paragraph and was like, oh man, I actually have some things that I think about that, but I wouldn't have, you know, realized that unless I read this paragraph. And then we got 30 people in this room that all talked about it. And it's just a really, it's really fun. It's really, it's, to me, I love it so much because it, you know, Jake said that we're first a community organization and second a publishing press. And that, the Get Lit, like, really taps into the community heart of what we're doing. And it's really down to earth and just encompasses everything that we want to do. So it's a really fun event.
Four Chambers has been doing so many different kinds of projects. You have a journal, you have anthologies, you have a reading series, you have Get Lit, the Salon series. What's next? What are you doing with the rest of 2016?
Sure. I can probably speak to that a little bit more. So we have a very full season planned for 2016. We have a number of readings that we are hosting or organizing for local authors as well as touring authors. We have a collaboration we're doing with the collage group Cut Paste Phoenix on September 14th. Cut Paste is usually visual arts focused, and so they're basically making collages out of found materials. And through another project that never came through, I thought it would be interesting for us to do found poetry and erasures through that as well, so that we are, again, creating like a more holistic or rich kind of cultural fabric. We have 3 books we're working on, maybe 4 that we're trying to get out by the end of the year, which is ambitious. We have some promotional partnerships in place with some other organizations here in the Valley, Virginia G. Piper Writing Center, the University of Arizona Poetry Center, and Spillers. So we are communicating with them just in the course of what we do, and they have a really interesting season coming up as well. They'll be, the Poetry Center will have 2 readings at the Phoenix Art Museum in September and October. The Piper Center will have a few here and there, and then Spillers 5 will be on August 23rd at Crescent. And who knows? Maybe more.
Do you imagine Four Chambers becoming, well, how do you imagine Four Chambers evolving in future years? Like, how big do you imagine this getting?
Can you clarify what you mean by big?
that's a good question. How do you envision Four Chambers in, say, 5 years from now?
Yeah, so a lot of what we've been doing, I don't know if you guys heard me sigh before I answer that too, because it shows all the thinking we've been doing about this. So we've been thinking a lot recently about how to make Four Chambers a sustainable, healthy, and growth-oriented organization, one that can grow and that it does not reach like a certain limit in terms of its current resources or energy. So we're looking at, you know, publishing between 8 and 12 works a year for the next 2 years. We're looking at, you know, creating a membership model so that we can begin to receive more support from the people who want to support us moving beyond the idea of sales. I don't have any specific statistics, but I think a lot of presses are going the nonprofit route because it is simply hard to cover overhead and grow with the profit model of books. They're just not very profitable. And we're not really doing this for profit either. We're doing this to create community and to create discourse. So, you know, we really are looking to run like a host of programs as well. I think what particularly interests us in terms of growth is beginning to do more special projects, more specific or public art projects where we really are taking a group of authors or taking a community and really investigating an area and producing art around that area in conjunction with other experts or other practitioners or other people who are interested in this as well. So I don't want to say too much about that because we're really trying to just focus more on operations at this point. And
the future is a big place.
The future is huge, yeah. So I think, you know, in summary, Four Chambers over the next 2 to 5 years is really more about producing a really strong catalog of authors based here in Phoenix and the United States and perhaps wherever else we may retrieve manuscripts, and really establishing a national and international presence as a press, you know, publishing contemporary literature, while continuing to provide like a robust set of programs for people who live here.
I think it's safe to say that both of you are very busy. And you also have jobs that are not Four Chambers related. Do you have time to write yourselves?
Writing is really important to me, and writing is something I enjoy a lot. I don't get to write myself as much as I'd like. I'm actually getting better at setting aside, you know, I think I'm up to like 4 or 5 hours a week writing, and I'm not working on anything in specific right now, but I am just keeping that part of me alive. And at the same time, I mean, I get to be around literature almost all the time. I get to go to all of our events. I get to, you know, be in all the writing groups, the salons. And so, you know, even when I'm not writing, I am very much, you know, thinking creatively and engaging in that really important creative part of myself. And that in itself is enough when I'm too busy to sit down and write every day. So, but he writes.
Yeah, I mean, I think maintaining a writing practice is something that pretty much everybody who maintains a writing practice struggles with, and I think anybody who tries to do anything whatsoever. I personally spend 1 or 2 hours each morning writing. I try to keep that going. It becomes hard when we have deadlines or work or, you know, life things going on, and some days I won't make it to the coffee shop, but I try to keep a pretty rigorous schedule. We have a feature in August that we're both working towards on August 26th, I believe, at the Phoenix Poetry Series. So I have some prose pieces I'm working on for that, just like kind of silly things about a series of air conditioner, plumbing, heating repair commercials by a local company. I'm rewriting the relationship between Dennis Rodman and Kim Jong-un when they visited each other in 2013. I'm doing a poem about Ted Cruz eating a booger, and then I'm also doing a poem about the beef industry, but I'm basically just changing out beef for girls and seeing if there's like some sort of weird feminist critique that will emerge out of the history of the beef industry. It seems to be going pretty well.
Yeah. So. Jake has a lot of time to just like think of all these really interesting culturally and politically relevant things to write about. He has the brain for it, whereas I just tend to write about like my childhood, budding ways that I hope are compelling. So I don't know if I want to list off things like Jake just did,
sure.
But I guess I write about I've been writing about things about my body recently, which sounds sexy, but it's not actually. and also things about my religious upbringing, and and things like that that are just kind of tapping into a part of myself that maybe has been quiet for a while.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really interesting to, like, to see, like, Kelsey as a woman writing about the personal, and then I, as a male, have to write about the political, or, like, that's what I'm choosing to do, because in a certain respect, I don't have to write about the personal. I think, like, this probably isn't the place or the time, but it's like I've been actually stuck for a month or two now just trying to figure out, like, what should I be writing, or should I be writing something, or what can my writing do, you know? Like, how can this fulfill the same goals that Four Chambers is fulfilling in a certain respect, right? Like, how can my writing or art generally create discourse or create change, you know? And what kind of change or discourse do I want to create?
Well, it's what I've always heard from painters is that when you're facing the blank canvas, it's that first stroke of the paintbrush that's sometimes the most difficult.
Yeah.
So, speaking of writing, could we hear an excerpt from one of your stories?
Yeah, sure. Sorry. Yeah. Thanks. Yeah. Thanks for letting me read something. It's really cool. I don't get to share my writing as much because I'm focusing a lot of time and energy on others' writing, which I really enjoy as well, but sometimes it's really cool to be able to share mine. So this is, Four Chambers did a collection called Insight, where we partnered with a local gallery called iLounge, and you know this, you were in it, but so we had 11 authors partnered with the 11 artists of the gallery, and basically each pair reacted to each other's work in their own medium, and so we published a book of all of the poetry and prose that was written in response to the artists, and I was partnered with Ashley Zukowski, who was just amazing, and just look her up online, because if I start talking about her, I'll never stop, but so this is a longer piece, but it's written in smaller vignettes, and they're right in the middle, but hopefully you can catch on. In the last month, every night
when
was
the
same.
When she was 12 years old,
Vera
made
found
it to
one
bed
of her father's and opened
shoeboxes.
One of the 7 books on her nightstand
she
to somewhere in the middle. She stared at the page, trying to see words. Alan moved around the room, getting ready to join her. She knew he had read each book twice. She couldn't even recognize the titles when they stared back at her from their proud stack. By the time he came out of the bathroom, moving a toothbrush rhythmically over his teeth, she gathered that the chapter was about all different things she could do with the placenta. A white film of bubbles started to border his mouth. "Ah," he said, patting her leg through the comforter. "Almost there." By the time Alan fell asleep, her stomach was alive. She couldn't find a position that muffled or softened the flips and vibrations inside her body. She moved to the ground, leaning up against her side of the bed, and placed her laptop on her knees. The screen peeked out just over her belly. She always kept the sound off, finding that she didn't like to be told what was happening on the screen. She knew what was happening. This specific episode was set in the polar regions. The focus bounced from one animal family to another, each with struggles unique to their kind, each with the strong instinct to stay alive. The babies were almost always in danger from the environment, from themselves, other species. The wolves used their noses to nudge their young from the rear, directing them through the ice. The muskox encircled their young so predators couldn't break through. The owls worked hard together, hunting all day and night to feed their babies, whose hunger was incessant. Vera's favorite were the penguins. Her heart would pound, her throat loaded with lumps of pride, as she watched them waddle through life. They endured the harshest conditions, learned how to swim, and fought vultures that soared above them, plunging their sharp beaks into their comfortable circles. The males would sit still for months, enduring the cold against their thick coats so their eggs didn't have to. When the cold front started to lift, the plump mothers finally came home, and Vera, covering her mouth with her hand, swallowed chirps of delight, watched them follow their baby's cries to the crowd to feed them for the first time. but there were some mothers who didn't get a reunion. Throughout the harsh winter, their children had frozen to death, and their round bellies now had no one to feed. Vera watched these mothers and admired their endurance during tragedy. They didn't waste time. Their instincts were alive and strong. They searched for babies. And when they found one, wandering through the crowd, hungry and cold, they couldn't help it. They needed to nurture. The lost baby found himself surrounded by lost mothers, desperate to save him. And the winning mother, who succeeded in scooping him under her thick fur, would end up back at square one. The crowd of grieving mothers had smothered her adopted rescue, and she was an orphaned mother once again. Vera's tears were silent, her breathing even, as she hoisted herself back onto the bed and curled up next to Alan.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
And Kelsey and Jake, thank you so much for joining us on Heart of the Arts on KBOC. It's been a pleasure having you.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you.